Hello.
Hey Andy, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It looks like we got the bridge going now. We had some bridge issues before, so I think Chris may have stole my email and popped it on. Sorry about any confusion about that. We'll just wait a few minutes for folks to join on. I need to email and queue a few people back.
Hi, can you
Nope, can't hear you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna email Chris real quick too. I'll see if we can get this record. Hey Brian, do you have I know you had like host controls before. Are you able to record? Hey Brian, are you there or?
It is recording.
Oh, it is? Where do you Where do you
It
see
says it's
it's
recording on my screen.
Oh, up at the
top
top,
corner.
okay.
Yeah, top corner.
Oh, good. Excellent.
So, just out of interest, Andy, I actually recorded this anyway, so just to make sure it would work okay. So, I've got a recording I'm going to play. So, so you can record the recording if you want it, but
Recording or recording? Oh,
yeah.
no. We'll see if there's any degradations as you keep recording the
That's
recording.
right. Well, I fear there will be, by the way.
All right. We'll just wait one more minute because I know there's a lot of material to cover. But Nigel, do you want to go grab presenting rights?
Yeah, it's good. I think I can do that with this. Come on, let's just do that.
Good. I'd like to welcome everyone to our first VNF modeling call of the year, and I'd like to thank Nigel Davis from Ciena, who is a well-known industry expert in the area of UML modeling, etc., to give us a quick overview tutorial of the Eclipse Papyrus modeling tool. We're going to be making heavy use of Papyrus as we progress a lot of the work we're doing in ONAP with respect to UML models. At first, I think we're going to mainly use it for information models, but I think we also want to start employing things like Papyrus for use case modeling and sequence diagrams, interactions, etc. So there's a lot of powerful things we can do with that, as well as I think we can use Papyrus GenDoc to actually create documentation around the information models as well, which is really great. So I'd like to pass it on over to Nigel. Thanks,
Yeah,
Nigel.
so as I said, I recorded the thing. I've actually not done quite as much as I said I would do in the introduction that I recorded. I didn't get that far. It takes an hour, this does already. So there's a few other things we'll have to cover later, but let me, if you'll excuse me playing this with an introduction of myself at the beginning, but so I thought I'd be mistaken on something else. I need to.
Hi,
There you go.
I'm Nigel Davis. Is
That
currently
clear?
looking at the Papyrus UML modeling tool in use in ONF.
Is that, can you hear that okay, by the way, Andy?
Yeah, so far, if we can pop it up the volume a little bit, it'd be better.
I'll see if I can do that, but I'm not sure we've got any opportunity going louder than that, actually. It's a bit complicated. It can be, oh, okay, I can go about that. Okay. That's okay, right, I'll carry on then. Here we go.
So, first of all, I want to give a brief view of some of the organizations so you know that we're using Papyrus. Then, give a general overview of the ONAP related to Papyrus, highlighting some of the models, the guidelines that we've constructed to assist in the use of the tool and generation of models, and tools we've been writing that are associated with Papyrus to, for example, generate interface schemas. Then I'll move on to the Papyrus itself and talk briefly about installation, then give a quick summary of the tool structure, and then dive into the detailed class models, which have been our primary focus in ONF. And then I'll talk about some of the models. And then I'll move on to some more specific aspects of use in ONF. I also want to talk about ISOMI, which is the initiative that we have been developing the guidelines under, and also this associated tooling. I'll highlight those two things in a bit more detail. And I'll talk about some of the practice issues when I get to the back end of the presentation. And I'll also pick up some issues as I go through, and I'll be demonstrating I'll be using primarily an Oxygen version of Papyrus, but possibly using a Mars version. We're currently in the process of moving from Mars to Oxygen in ONF, and hence to make it a little bit easier to show the things we're doing using both those tools. I've got a bit of background in the slide pack, but I won't be sharing that today. So let's move on to organizations using Papyrus. Obviously, ONF, we use Papyrus for information models and what we might call data models. Now, we don't tend to use data modeling in ONF in this work. We've used information models right up to the point of interface schema generation. We use tooling to generate that schema from the information models. And that works down in the context of software-defined standards in ONF. IGT, who's Papyrus for the information modeling work, we work closely with IGT in ONF, and we've found the use of the same tool very helpful in transfer of insight and models, etc. ATIV, who use Papyrus for the information models, derived from their capital representation and normative documents. They use Papyrus really as an informative tool. MEF, who use Papyrus in their NRM and NRP projects related to Presto. I'll show Presto on the outside figure in a few moments. And they have taken the TAPI work from ONF to construct Presto, and hence use the same tools necessary and vital. TM Forum, who are in the process of migrating their information models to Papyrus, they can publish the Papyrus forum of their information model, and we work very closely with them. TMF, we're in the process of helping TMF adopt a portion of the MNF model as part of their overall information modeling initiative. Various commercial telecoms organizations who use Papyrus internally and who are involved in this external work, and players in other industries such as aerospace and automotive who also use Papyrus. The critical consideration for us in ONF was that this was open source and free. It's highly platform-based tools was a helpful aspect because we were familiar with Eclipse platform-based modeling tools from prior activities, so the migration was relatively straightforward. The capabilities, obviously, it needs to be a reasonably capable tool. The key thing, though, is that it's free. That means there's no barrier to entry at all. No excuses for not using it. Now, moving on to the ONF's use of Papyrus. We use Papyrus for the ONF common information model, especially the core model when focusing on modeling of network and equipment and control in the context of ONF. The model work on the which is available on the ONF wiki, and that work is in a Git repository, which is currently private, but will be opening our work up over here. So we published the work in and the 1.3 version is available via that link in Dropbox. Currently, the 1.3.1 version we published in the ONF library in January. The other two is also available in the ONF library. In ONF, we also are doing TAPI, Transfer API, work with Papyrus. So that's the work that leads to the generation of interface schema in Yang. We're working very closely with MEF and MEF take that TAPI works the basis for their Presto work, a couple of links there, the work. The Wireless Device API, Wireless Device API, also used Papyrus. They drawn heavily from the information model. They pruned out a few pieces of the information, but the core information model was as is. The TAPI work is that there was more significant pruning and refactoring related to the context of the application. And then we have the item profiles, which support the generation the interface and also support the completeness of the model. Those profiles are available, so I'll talk a bit more about the profiles later. In ISOMI 2, we tested the model of the work. We've constructed some guidelines on UML usage where we've tried to narrow down on the broad capabilities in UML to simplify some of the work. And also have some guidelines on the virus itself, including the use of GenDocs, which is a tool that allows us to generate word documentation from the model. We also have some UML to interface guidelines and schema guidelines, UML to Yang, which is the primary tool used to convert the TAP UML models into schema in Yang. UML to OpenAPI, that's mature as a tool, but this is a direct UML to OpenAPI rather than going by Yang to OpenAPI. OpenAPI is the new term for Swagger. UML Prograph, some work on the construction there. We've got a guideline reviewing, and then we're doing some tooling for that. And then UML Task, we're exploring what that means. There's also a draft of the proving refactoring guideline that mentioned that TAPI was fairly heavily proving refactored from the ONF core. We've got a set of guidelines that help us determine what are sensible things to prune and refactor and whatnot. And we're in the process of constructing some tools. So we've seen tools done by the UML Yang, UML OpenAPI, and a prototype of the pruning and refactoring tooling. So they're the primary tools that we're doing under ISOM. I mentioned MathPresto in this slide. The LSL and highlights the addition of Presto. So this is where the TAPI interface will be considered as applying in an RNF context, or at least here, and then Math is where TAPI is applied. But I don't intend to do much of this, but there's a very brief summary fragment of the RNF model that is in the internal support part. It's extracted from the RNF document TR512, it's the .2 document in the series, and it highlights in the lower right-hand corner the view of the UML model. It's obviously not showing attributes, etc. It's the structural part. And in the other quadrants, some pictorial views of topology that relate to this. The color scheme is relatively consistent between the diagrams. So before I do the actual demo itself, I wanted to give a brief summary of the color. So I give a brief overview of the ISOM work structure, so looking at where things are on the web and then you get to some of the stuff, especially the guidelines. I'll then look at installation of the views, focusing a little bit on the ISOM guideline and doing a brief installation. And after that, through that, I'll look at tool versions and how I want to choose a particular version for that goal. I'll then consider the tool structure. .notation.da key files behind that, especially the UML notation. Then I start using the tool, get a model into the tool, and then run through some aspects of the tool, perspectives, panes, navigation between panes and cross models. I'll do that around a class model, focus on some of the class model capabilities. And I'll talk also about other features within the panel, so validation, style sheets, use of GenDocs for documentation generation, and Git repository. During the demonstration, I'll also touch on some of the models, a sequence. I'll just talk briefly also about the use of the context of so core and TAPI, the work that profiles are showing key things there, and the premium factor of the venture. And the work here is to increase the rigor of the representation of our demonstration itself. I wanted to just pick up, first of all, on some of the resources. So this is the ONF main org page. If you go to software-defined, you know, UIs, user-defined, a page with information about the project type, also transport and transport user copy, information about the project, see the 1.2 model, which is together 1.3.1 shortly. And the urban transport project has got information and the requirements of TAPIA pieces will appear as we progress. And moving on to the wiki, this is the dashboard for launching the various wikis. Again, open information modeling and tooling. This takes you to two places. I'm going to use an iSAMI here, so we'll come over to iSAMI. Now, the iSAMI work, if I get that, I can look at the various teams, but the infrastructure sub-team is of interest, especially for this particular discussion. And the infrastructure sub-team has a number of pages here. The key one is the guidelines. And by the guidelines, you can get the UML modeling guidelines, the proposed guidelines, and two versions of it. And we're using the proposed guidelines, number 3.7.3 for the work here. So, opening the proposed guidelines, notes work in progress. This will be ongoing work in progress as we progress, and the virus will continue to update the guidelines. Moving to this is the section of getting proposed running, so how to a local environment. I won't be talking about this in detail. I'll be showing a couple of locations and some level running through the text here. This version of the guidelines talks about installation of version 3 for oxygen. The previous version of the guidelines talks about installation of Mars, so this is an early form of the oxygen guidelines. So rather than going through the guidelines, I think it would be more sensible to go to the specific pages. So here's the Papyrus downloads page. This provides several instructions, and you can get the Eclipse modeling package. That's this one, modeling tools, that's got the appropriate content for Papyrus loaded, and then you can bring in a particular version of Papyrus. This is the update site location for the latest version of Papyrus for Oxygen. You can also pick a particular more recent nightly update if you want to, or you can pick a specific Papyrus package. If I go to that page, we can see we can get the latest release, and latest release, and also various stable builds that have been lodged. So release candidate 4 is the latest at this particular point. So we go back to the packages page, Eclipse Oxygen packages. I've got the Eclipse modeling tools. I picked the from system Windows 64-bit version. This takes me to this. When I download that, I get that this is a zip file. It takes a few minutes to download, so I'll skip that stage. Here's the zip file downloaded earlier. And when I unzip that appropriately, I get this. If I launch that, this takes a while on the first launch, but I've already launched it once, and so it'll only take a few seconds. I get that dialogue, so I'll hang around for a long time when you first launch it. And then I get this. I've actually updated the workspace here as well. It comes up with the default workspace, but as you can check, that's where you want to put the workspace.
Hey, Nigel, can you stop for a second?
Documents on pin.
Yes, Alex.
So on the download part, you know, the bane of my existence with, yes. With Eclipse. Do you just pick you just hit the download button at the top, right? And that should start something, right?
Yeah, that's right. That should do. That should download it. That downloads a zip file. It was the button on the on the page behind here. So that downloads a zip file, and that zip file is shown at the top over here, isn't it? So that's my cursor now. So that button at the top downloads that zip file. That zip file has the contents behind here. Clicking on the Eclipse, you get to this launch page. That's just raw Eclipse. I mean, that should load. with no issue on your system.
Okay, gotcha.
Nothing to do with Papyrus.
Okay, I'm trying this on my home system at the same time. So.
Yeah, it takes a little while to download, but it doesn't take too long. So it turns what you pack.
All right.
Okay.
So I click launch on that. After some while, it'll come up with
Zest. To the
so we say did that earlier, yeah. Just to take time. There's a set of things you might be interested in looking at here, but I'll go straight into the workbench. It's the basic form of the workbench. Let's maximize that. So at this point, we're looking at a raw Eclipse platform with no Papyrus loaded. To load Papyrus, we need to go down here and install modeling components. We'll select that. And I can see a number of alternative tools I can pick up, and down here is Papyrus. If I click that, it'll start to do an installation for me. So after a few moments, it comes up with this dialog. I'll just progress with this. We've got a set of Papyrus UML features that we install. Obviously, accept the terms of the license conditions that I have not read. And off we go. So it's loading here, installing software at 49%. I'll pause now and then we'll get back when it comes back. So after a little while, it comes back with this dialog. Obviously, I'm going to restart and then we'll go through some further processes. There we go. You can see I've got another launcher in the background there. So it should start relatively quickly, and we'll see how we get on. So I load a few packages in, and then we get back to this. We can now go off to the workbench again, and now we'll find Papyrus available as a perspective. We need to change the perspective to the Papyrus perspective, so that's done with that top corner button. So like that, and if we go, that'll restructure the UI. So we'll do a quick overview of the structure here, and then we can go and load a project in. So project explorer, no projects loaded currently, model explorer, no models loaded and open currently. Outline, which will be the outline of the diagrams, which will be up here. And then a number of panes here for properties, validation, etc. Prior to opening the project itself and the tool, I'll just look at the project file structure. So here's the location. There's a dot project file which gives the context, little and not of interest. Dot DI, again, little of interest in that one, really. And then dot UML, which is where the model is itself, and dot notation, which is where all the diagrammatic information is. Look at I've got these set up so I can just open them trivially in a file form. You can see it's .xmi, and if you become more familiar with this stuff, you can start to browse and modify stuff in there as well if you want to, but steer clear initially. Dot notations are the same sort of form, and this is all the stuff on the layout. So briefly, just looking at the couple of ways to get models into the tool. So I can either do a new Papyrus project where I can add various model fragments, diagrams, etc., and do a profile. I can do a UML model. If I say UML model, it then gives me the option to name the model, which I'm just going to random name the knowledge. And then I can choose whether I want to go and create an empty class diagram, etc., etc. So that's one way. I can alternatively, so what I want to do here, import an existing project. So here I go general, existing project from workspace. Next, I can enter the directory where it is and browse that. And I can see there's a project here. And I could then select that, finish, and it'll then open the project, which I'll do in a moment. So now I've opened the project. If I look in the project explorer, I can see a number of pieces in this project. Obviously, it's relatively complex. There's been various bits added to it. You start with a new project, obviously, you want to get all this stuff. Here's the basic model to look at, DI notation, UML, as we looked at a few months ago. In this, I've also got some YAML profiles I'm going to use, and I've also got the ONF core model I'm going to play around with a few bits of at some point. If I then select ONF, which already has, but let me just do it again, I can see in the Model Explorer for the ONF code that I've got various pieces here, a thing called demo stuff and a thing called service. I'm open demo stuff up. A few sort of things I might also look at, a few moments, but there's also a class model demo package. These are packages. That package is empty, and this is what I'm going to work in a minute. You can also see down here the properties tab has some info. That's the info for the ONAP project itself, and you get the location, etc., so dates and so on. If I go into this, what I'm going to do is start adding various bits of model to this, figures and so on. So I can add items to this as a child entity, so the whole mass of things I can add here. I might just add a package for this particular demo, package one. And down here, I can see that package one has now appeared as the name. I've got a number of other tabs in the properties here that I didn't have before. And I can call this diagrams. And then in that package, which is now called diagrams, I can create a new diagram, which is a class diagram. So I'm going to work, and I'll call this demo diagram. And then in that one that appears, I must go and select that guy. There it is, it appeared now. There's the demo diagram that we're looking at. Welcome tabs now, it's still there, but we'll ignore that. And in this, I'll work and add various elements to the diagram. We'll talk through those in a few moments. But prior to that, we can see the tabs down here, UML comments, profile, general style for the diagrams itself. We'll be looking at those in more detail when we get to add classes, etc., to this this model. Before I add a class, maybe let's just look at the background menu here, so I can add shapes, notes, etc. I've got a number of items here for selecting all things on the diagram, filtering, etc. We'll look at those in more detail when we get to adding things on the diagram. And I can add entities to the model over here, and noted, so I could add new child entities, so classes, data types, etc., just straight to the package at any level, and then I can drag them onto the diagram. Maybe that's I'll do that initially here, so I can add a class to this, and we'll call this demo class one. So let's just put that. The same name. And we can then drag that onto the diagram as a method of creation if it wants to move on. Click. PC is not running ideally fast today. I can also add a class from here, just a raw class. I can click that guy and I can drop the thing here. So I'll do demo class 2 for the sake of some other name. Of course, obviously, notice here, because I've got demo class 1, I've got a little warning here telling me I've got two classes with the same name in the model. If I leave this here, it doesn't stop me doing this. There's only a warning I can have multiple classes with the same name, not actually the same name. So it's only putting it from a warning perspective, not a good idea necessarily to have multiple classes with the same names, but so when you're doing experimental work, sometimes that's unavoidable, really. So demo class 2, to make it somewhat happier. Okay, so now I've got two classes on the diagram here. Both are in the notice both methods, clearly added that to the thing, the Model Explorer here. And I could move these classes by dragging them into any of the other packages. I'll leave them here for now. But when we're structuring a model in ONF, we tend to package at some meaningful level, some level of the domain, we tend to package things in diagrams to that fragment of the model, the classes to that fragment of the model, the associations, etc. So we have a number of packages to get the model grouped. It makes it just a little bit easier to find things. But again, there are many potential styles, and I certainly we also propose that particular style. So I'm going to look at the tabs down the bottom here for, say, demo class one. So I select that. You'll notice the there we are, some detail here, various properties, attributes which are known operations, receptions, etc. We can look at those in a few moments. We've got a comments opportunity, so we can add a comment. I can add an applied comment to this, or our own comment. Let me do the applied comments. Let's say I get bored easily, or this is a demo class, let's open some text. And that appears here. You'll notice that I've got a little arrow here, which I haven't got this guy. And if I click that, of course, I've got the comment embedded. I can drag this comment onto the diagram if I want to do that. And I can associate it with the class by doing that. And there's a line that comes in. I'll show the associations over the class by doing that. So if you want to bring the comments out onto the diagram and associate, you can do this. Obviously, these diagrams can get incredibly large and incredibly cluttered very quickly, so you need to be careful with particular views to keep the thing under control. If I click on something on the diagram here, you'll notice in the Explorer, the context will move to that thing. See, this is highlighted. It's highlighted in gray here. If I click on Demo Class, note that. Demo Class 2, note that. When these link editors arrows are active, if I deactivate that, I deactivate that. You'll see this still selecting demo class 2, but if I now move the context here, this does not change. This is very useful for copying chunks of model from one place to another and moving chunks and so on by selecting a number of items, turning the link editors off, and then dragging the selected things here onto another diagram. There's a particular sequence you can go through to do that quite neatly. And anyway, let me put that back on again. So there we've got a pair of classes, a comment. We've talked about the navigator to a degree here, and we're going to move into the tabs down the side here. So there's the comment profiles. I've got some profiles in the model here. I maybe I should have shown that. And it's got, so if I select the top package here for a moment, I can see I can see that I've got a number of profiles for one profile in this case applied.
Just going to pause that for a second. This is some. I think Zoom's not running particularly well at the moment, so it seems to be lagging. I'm not sure if the audio's advanced on the presentation, but hopefully you can keep up with the. If you can sort of put a mental lag in place, I'll try and. I think I've got a link issue here. Actually, I was just watching it on another screen. Actually, I see it's not keeping up that well. But I'll try again. Hopefully, it'll come back here.
I'll apply the profiles here using the add profile. This particular one is the profile we use in iFMISOMI that provides a number of capabilities, including the lifecycle stereotypes. And we'll look at that in a few moments. If I go back to the demo class one and move down to the profile side tab here, I can see that model classes apply. This is by default. With this particular profile, it forces that application, that stereotype, and that stereotype has a number of items for support and condition. I can also add other stereotypes to this. You'll see open model class here. I can add other stereotypes to this. They'll appear in those brackets, so I can make this experimental. I'll talk a little bit about the lifecycle stereotypes that we applied for my Sony. If I do this, you'll see this class grow as experimental has been added here and also down here, etc. That experimental stereotype indicates that the class is indeed experimental. I'm not wanting to go through this too much, but the lifecycle stereotypes we find very useful with respect to publication of the model, so we can publish items that we're still working on as well as items that are mature. So we have a lifecycle stereotype. As a range of values, we can look at that in a few moments. But anyway, let me leave that there with the experimental one that says that this is not a mature class. A number of other items down here. I'll skip style sheets. I probably won't have a chance to do those in this. But just to note, the style sheets for the diagrams and so on allow you to restrict the way the classes display. So the appearance is the thing that I can use to adjust what shows in the class. I may just tweak that now, actually usefully, I just added a stereotype in. So I can change the line colors, widths, etc. And also do that on the diagram itself. So I just quickly bring the menu up and note format. So font, full color, line, style. Ignore a few of those items. So I can then change the font and photo. There's a peculiar bug with the font on the lines. It changes the text as well. And then the next one you modify, it changes it back again. But you'll see that, and it's easy to learn. But if I go down here further, I can change the decoration style and so on, but more critically, I can turn the stereotypes on and off, so I can turn the experimental one off so it's an appear in the class. I can also turn up the visibility of this stereotype. It has a number of properties in it. So here now you can see support mandatory condition, no statement condition, but if I broaden the class a little bit more, obviously, no statement condition, etc. So I can add in, I can also turn off the stereotype to declutter the thing a bit more. So now I can see it's mandatory and condition as a condition, whatever that means. Then I can turn off, for example, the condition because whatever it means, I'm not interested in that, so it's gone. So I can play around with those things on a per instance basis, so class basis, instance or class basis. And what else we got down here? I think much more of interest. The element icon, I'll just turn off that class symbol here. So I'll do that, I'll just turn that off. Okay, so rulers, grids, not interesting. Advanced. This gives details of the class in a different view. You can sometimes find that it modifies the properties down here is useful. So the class has got a number of compartments. At the moment, we've got no attributes on that basis. We're not seeing on this one. The compartments are attributes, operations, and nested classifiers. There are other compartments you can add if you need them. I'll focus on the attributes here. From an operations perspective, we don't add operations directly to a majority of the classes in the RNF model. I'll explain that probably at some point. But I will show operations in the classes from TAPI, so you know, for Paul and his operations in a particular place. I may get a chance to show that as well. Let me show you also from the menu, I can filter the compartments, so I can turn compartments on. I can do that on multiple classes in one go, but let me just do this guy. So it's showing, so there are other compartments you can add. Attributes, operations, and nested classifiers. Let's assume I don't want attributes and nested classifiers, sorry, I don't want operations. Let me just click that. That then turns the class into this, and I've only got the attribute box. This tends to be the view we take in a lot of the classes in the RNF core model. So now I'm going to add an attribute to that class. Again, I can do the addition over here in the Model Explorer. I can also do it here in the nodes pane. If I look down here, you can see I can add comments. I can create components constraints to look at some of those shorting on all data types enumerations. If I click down to this point, I get properties. I can drag a property onto the class like this. It will then appear in the class. If I go back to the UML, it's called attribute one. Let's just call it demo attribute one for lack of creativity. And I can see I can set a number of things. These are ordered, static, read only, unique, etc. And I can set the visibility, multiplicity of it. And let me change the multiplicity for the sake of doing something. So I can make it one dot dot star. And I can set its type, which I'll do in a moment. And I can set default value once I've got the type. This is not expanded to class. If I drag the class out, you can see when I can get the appropriate arrow. You can see that there's the property one star. And let's make it sort of boringly Boolean. So if I bring out that. I'm going to get a type. I've got some types defined in the model, but I've actually also got primitive types available. I'll talk about how I got those in a moment. Boolean's already down the bottom here, so for previous playing, but let me just click on Boolean there, and that gives me a Boolean type. And now the type is Boolean up here, Boolean here, Boolean here, obviously. It's the same thing being displayed in various forms. I got the type from this, which is a package that I included. So I can show that very briefly if I do. You bring me down here using a number of items I'm not going to talk about. Import, and I can import a registered package. This is a registered package, so if I just quickly do that, I can see there's a number of primitive types I can get hold of, and so on. So they come with a tool, essentially. I can also import other models. Let's just do that. So I can import things from there using model. Gives me the opportunity to pull in the ONF core, which I can then take classes or reference stuff, etc. I don't plan on doing any of that now, so we cancel that. So if I I've named the attributes, let me just click on that again, T-selecting in context, because the arrows are here. There's my attribute. I can comment the attribute, not surprisingly. I can set profiles in the attributes, and there's that open model profile for the attributes, and notice it's got many more properties in it we can look at some point. Is invariant, for example, is a critical one, we also have unit string and various other value ranges and so on. We can set on that in the stereotype. Again, appearance, I can play around with the color, and again, I can use the menu up here for the color, etc. Things of that sort. I can also turn on off the stereotype visibility in exactly the same way as I could with the class. You'll find there are some of the entities you can't do this with fully, not quite clear why, but certainly with the class and attributes, you have a full range of capabilities, very similar sort of thing, except of course there are a ton more of them in this particular case. If I want to, and there are various reasons to potentially want to do this, I can drag the attribute onto the diagram as a box in its own right. So there's demo attribute one. This is the same attribute as that. If I select this, you can see that I'm in the same context. Move the context just to make it obvious. I'm not with the tool I'm doing. Move the context to make it obvious, and then if I bring it back in, there's the demo attribute again. So that I can bring the thing up in outside the class, and again, there are occasions where I want to do that to associate it with other attributes, etc., and put rules on. But again, I won't go into that detail. We should have a number of other capabilities with the properties. So I'm going to drag another one onto this class here, which I'm going to be very dull and call demo attribute 2 when the pane comes up for me. Thank you. I'm going to write the right little tab up here. I'm going to change the name to demo attribute 2. Again, we've got a little warning there because the name is the same as another thing in that class. And then I was going to show the filter on the class and turn the view of attributes on and off with the filter. We can also do it with other methods, but we use the filter. I can show hide content here, and here you can see the two attributes are visible, and I can turn demo attribute 1 off. And it will disappear from the context of the class, and there's demo attribute 2 on the view. Clearly, it hasn't disappeared from the class itself, it's fully present. It's just a matter of clutter, reduction of clutter, and so on. But I can drag it back on again by getting hold of that and dragging it into here, and that will then turn it back on again. So I don't want to use the filters, I can use that method to turn things back on. And clearly, I can't drag that attribute into another class, it won't display it. You'll find there is a peculiar little bug when you move an attribute from one class to another that it stays on the display. It certainly did in previous versions. It may have been fixed now. I've not tried that. Let me try it. But it'll stay in the old class as well as appearing in the new class. You can simply remove the other thing from the view. So the other method, let me get rid of demo, I should be going again just for the sake of writing. I can delete from the select element from the diagram. Don't delete it, that'll delete it from the model. Delete from the diagram, let's shift delete, and that will then take it back out. So that's the other method for removing it from the view, as I said, I can then drag it back in again. So a couple of ways of doing the same thing. Depends upon preference, efficiency, where you are, etc., as to which one you'll use. I find I use all of those in different times. So now I want to add a new data type. So for additional complex data types, let me just go back up the energy of the thing to respond to me again. We got, so I've got a data type here, and just drag that to the diagram, and we'll see it appear in the package we're working in. There it goes over there. And I'll call it complex type. Although it's not going to be very complex in the demo at all. I can also create enums and drag those guys on. And enum literals, I can drag a literal in. I might doubly leave that as enumeration one, enumeration literal one. And of course, the we have a format which I haven't stuck to. So let me correct the names of these and not go back and start it again. Format. As we're watching as soon as this already criticized me. Our format is Lara Camel for attributes. So the tool clearly doesn't police that at all. That's the format for myself. Alpha Camel for classes, Alpha Camel for types and enumerations, and caps separated by underscores for loss. For enumeration literals, apologies for those watching who are waiting for me to correct that until this point. Okay, so that gives me enumeration. I can now set this, the type of this undefined attribute, to the new enumeration literal. Let's play go and look in. Various, I will find demo stuff, I will find class model demo in the diagrams package, which is where it shouldn't be. There's enumeration one at that, and there we go. So it's now enumeration one all over the place. Right, now we're considering association to the diagram with the model, and we'll move demo class two over a bit because we're a little bit cluttered if I do this. I'll click on that to close that so I can see all the edges. I'm going to look at a directed association in a moment, but you can see the associations and edges here, association classes, and generalization, instance, spec, links, generalizations, links. In fact, that's actually a link to where we've got that edge on the diagram anyway, and so on. So I'm going to pick on the directed association. I'm going to look at a shared association. So I'm going to drag on here, and then I can cause this to aggregate those. And you'll see when I've done that, the default is for a multiplicity of this end of 1 and that 0.1. Here I can see that it's, as you see, it's navigable. So navigability is true. The black blob here tells me it's classifier based navigability. So the end is in the classifier. You can see here, if we look at demo class one, that it now has a demo class two attribute of type demo class two. So there's the attribute not present in the diagram here because we didn't ask it to put it in, but and it's showing on the end role of the association. The only thing else down here, you can see down here the multiplicities as selected, and I can change this to star, for example. And there's the star appearing here in the diagram, and obviously over here, 0.star, etc. So I'll do that over here anymore. if I want to get the attribute, and there are occasions when you want that to happen, of course, most of the time you don't, there are occasions when you want it to happen. I can use the shelters, show I content as we did before, and I can now click on that property, and of course I can now see this appear as we wanted to do. That was a bug in Neon. We couldn't do this. This was a real pain for some of the LNF work. Been fixed. Thank you very much. So I might want to straighten this line here. So I can, looking at the association here on appearance, I can turn it to rectilinear. This will have a layout challenge, which I'll show you in a moment. Just go past the bike's coding manual, I'll make it rectilinear. That will leave me a little kink. I can move this around quite happily and straighten it. Once I've done that, you will find you can't move the association here in a train until I go up to the top. You'll see it jumps back to that position. You have to move it outside. If you want to move it, you have to move it outside the context. That's a new bug in Oxygen. It wasn't there in Neon or Mars. So a bit of a nuisance, but hey, you can work around that one. Move the association multiplicity over. We tend to hide the association ends that are not navigable in the classifiers, so we tend to use that. We don't tend to show these in the classifier, because that's duplication on the diagram, so leave it unshown. You can, of course, you're going to go and show properties, you can drag it out and associate it, and so on, as I showed before. And I'll do that from diagrams, we tend to settle at that sort of position. Let me go back to that thing. We also, for all the navigable attributes, we in the, you'll see in the in our guidelines, we again use, of course, the lower camel, but we underscore the front of those. That's just a style, and we prefer that style in the ONF model, and it's in the ISO guidelines. Let me think of other things here that I'll show. Put that back there, naming the association. Of course, I can name it, so we'll go on demo class 1 or a dull name. I can stereotype the association. So again, I could go to the profiles. There's no default. If I go to the profiles on the association, there's no default profile for the association, but I can add experimental to that, which it absolutely is here. And that will appear as a separate place item here, so I can move those around. I currently got this snap to grid. I tend to turn that off personally, but snap to grid, so you may or may not prefer that. I prefer the free form movements. One of the improvements, you used the previous version, one of the improvements in the current version is that the end roles and multiplicities move with the end rather than fly around the diagram. But the association names don't stick quite so well, so your opponent, some movements tend to throw the things all over the place again. With Mars, I spent a long time trying to find where the multiplicities had disappeared to, sitting underneath a 2 or something, name or an attribute. So that I think gives sufficient on here. I can add comments, obviously, to the association, profiles we talked about, appearance, we just looked at very briefly. Again, I can get the same sort of filters and bumps. That's probably sufficient for the simple view of association. So actually, maybe one additional thing was we're looking at this, I can change the, not surprising, I can change the navigability by clicking these things here, so now it's navigable, both those, and that's one more navigable. I can change the navigability here, the owner of the navigability to association. You'll see little black blobs have disappeared. It also changes the thing to default, so the default change of owner also takes the non-navigable. I can make it navigable, but owned by the association. If I click on the association here, and look in the association itself, you can see it owns both of the attributes at the moment. It's got both ends. If I make the association navigable with the, as we worked before, with the classifier, you'll see that it loses one of the attributes and that goes into the class as we took a few moments ago. So I can add another instance spec to to us to represent demo class 2, which
small video editing error there. It was an instant spec added before this. This is now adding the second one. I think I might be a bit out of order here. I had to watch this to see if I got the editing right, but I haven't. So apologies for that. You'll have to sort of jump around to work out what I'm doing here. But so I added an instant spec, and this is adding a second one. The instant specs, I'll just describe this. It might appear later. I'll have to zip past it. But the instant specs allow you to do instances of the classes, and it does constrain you to, you can have a blank instance spec, you then allocate a class to it, then constrains which attributes you can add. So it's properly doing proper instances, although it's a bit of a cumbersome feature actually, but I need to go back and edit that properly now. Anyway.
Do quickly, that's going to do, classifier to it, stuff. Demo class 2. And I will now add an association to those, which get the instance spec link. I'll join those two. Let me do it. I'll do it that way around. So there's my type. I can make it untyped, or I can select that. So I'll do that. So it's now conforming to the type. So it's actually constraining that. Not the optimum display, in my opinion, but even so. So there I've got a pair of instances, one of class 1, one of class 2 that are associated. Now, clearly, an instance model will be far more extensive than this. There's a lot more to discuss in this area. That's just a quick introduction to the capability. But I should have mentioned that you can actually put multiple cases of a class on the diagram. So here's demo class 1, and again, you have to be very careful with this because the behavior is slightly peculiar around this, especially around associations and so on. But you can do this if necessary. That might be helpful. The tool doesn't prevent you from doing various display things, so you need to be very careful with that. As I mentioned earlier, we don't intend to put operations in the INF or core model for good reason, but I do want to discuss the operation opportunities. So if I scale up and down this for a moment, we've got signal reception, and we've also got other operation capabilities, which you can't find, so we'll try that again in operation. I'll show those in a moment in the TAPI model. So I'm now using Mars here rather than oxygen. This is the TAPI, a fragment of the TAPI model, and this is actually the notification subscription service, and there's a set of operations on available on that interface that allow you to manipulate the notification subscription service itself. I'm not going to go through this in any detail, but you can see you've got the operation itself and then a number of parameters, inputs, outputs, etc. So I'm going to click on that particular one here, increase the size of that there. So you see you've got own parameters, and you can see that somewhere in and somewhere out. And again, down the side here, if I look at the navigation zone, but so I look at the thing, you can see the two flows, inputs and outputs. And of course, these are drawn from the parser model, so I'm not going to go through that in any more detail, but not for TAPI anyway. Moving back to oxygen and opening up the core model, just a quick view here. It's some experimental work we've been doing in LMF, looking at the introduction of an outcome-oriented, constraint-based, intent-like interface capability to the control port or the control or network element or whatever else. And this is showing some operations operations here on ports, and also some signals and signal receptions. Just to really emphasize, we place our operations in one particular place in in the ONF work and not on all of the classes like LTP, etc. These are things that are talked about. So you talk through a port to a controller about the entities in the problem space. And you just talk about a couple of other items down here that are very important. So we've looked at adding comments to the class. I can just add a comment to the diagram like this. I don't bother putting any text if you don't mind. I can also add constraints to the model where I can, when I bring a constraint on, I get a context. I don't. Yes, there is. I get a context line. So I can put it, the constraint in the context of that particular class. I can define the constraint in OCL or in simple English if I'm not doing a rigorous model. And I can relate the constraint to other things. So the constraint can require that information, etc. So I can build a constraint around a context with other items related. We have been using constraints in a loose fashion in ONF at this particular point without OCL, and we recognize the need for OCL and whatever in that particular direction, but we also recognize the challenge of OCL from a normal human reading perspective. So we're looking at potentially construction of a domain-specific language with OCL behind it, where the constraints would contain the words of that that language, where we see common paths of constraints like a spiral of classes or a loop of classes, where in the class model it's clearly a simple-looking loop, but in the instance model it may not be an instance loop. It's an instance spiral where you don't go around in a simple or circle, etc. The final thing I want to do is add an association class. If I click on that slightly meaningless here, I'll put one between here and here. There's my association element of it. The class will appear in a few moments, depending upon the performance of my system. So there's the association class associated with the association. If I drag it, then I can also tie that association. I'm clicking at the rectilinear, etc. So I have the class, its properties, and so on. And clearly that class I can associate with other classes in the model. So I'm going to make it a very, very bizarre model in a moment. So I can make that association class aggregate those classes, whatever that might mean. So a few other things I wanted to consider just before I go on to the final slide on issues.
I suggest I don't go through these last bits. I'm overrunning already, and so that was the main demo piece of some stuff in the back of the presentation pack on ONF's relationship to other bodies with respect to ISOMI and so on. But perhaps I'll stop at that point.
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Nigel. I do appreciate this. What we can do, maybe we'll schedule a little time next week to continue the discussion around the ISOMI and how this all relates together.
Yeah.
And then talk about some of the modeling guidelines and how they can be utilized.
Yeah, I'll edit that bit of the video in that I dropped.
Yeah.
And fix that. There's a couple of things that I'll do with it as well, but to tidy up a few other things. I'll try and shorten it a little bit as well, and then I can make that available.
Excellent. Do appreciate it. Any other last thoughts or questions for Nigel before we drop? But we can continue this discussion next week. Yeah. So thank you all.
Thanks, Alex, Nigel. Alex, did you solve your load problem, by the way? Or are you gone?
No, I am stuck with Java issues.
Yeah, that'll be an Eclipse platform Java compatibility thing. It should be Java 1.8 or 8, or what do they call it? It should be the right level. Do you have that?
Well, that's what I thought I had.
You can't. Your audio is breaking up, Alex.
It's very suspect what's going on here.
Okay. I've had a problem like that before, but ages ago. I haven't had a problem like that for a long time on multiple machines. So it's it does seem to pick on some people.
Are you running Apple, Alex? Is yours Apple or is it a?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. Talk to you all soon. If I don't talk to you before, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again, Nigel. Bye-bye.